Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining this week's Master Instructor Roundtable. I'm Marty Miller here with co-host, dear friend, fellow Master Instructor, Miss Wendy Batts. Wendy, how's everything going today?
I am doing great, Marty. How are you?
Loving life.
I bet you are. Well, this week's topic, Marty, I know you put together the PowerPoint. However, I think this comes at a very good time because if you guys follow NASM's social media, you're going to see that NASM Performance. I did a video with one of our bodybuilding professionals, and her and I went over a single leg Romanian deadlift. And then NASM released a video of an individual doing a dumbbell deadlift as well. So I think, you know what, it's just coming at a good time. We wanted to go through, talk about the motions. But before we get started, I also want to let you guys know that in the notes to our podcast, if you look down into it, you're going to see a survey. And if you click on that link to take the survey and you fill it out and you give us, you know, your honest opinion, because we want to know the right answers. Hopefully we're also going to get a 5-star review from you. You have the opportunity to win a $100 gift card to Amazon. And so we would love your feedback, but we just want to also say thank you so much for always joining us and being a part of our podcast network, as well as joining Marty and I each week on the Master Instructor Roundtable. So Marty, let's dive in.
Yeah. So this question has been asked of me a lot. So a lot of this content is coming from your feedback and either hitting us up on Instagram or email. And we're going to talk about Romanian deadlifts or hinging patterns, right? I think hinging is sometimes often overlooked. It looks like a simple thing to do, or a lot of people get into lunges and squats and step ups, which are great, but they don't realize that that hinging pattern is one of the most fundamental movement patterns we're going to use in life. And Wendy, you know, I moved this weekend. I moved out of my house and had to put a lot of things in storage while I'm building a house. I did a lot of hinging. So I was thinking over and over about this podcast. So first and foremost, do you put it into your programming or do you just go with those other lower body exercises? If you put it in there, which we hope you do, do you know the key points to proper hinging techniques? And then just like anything else Wendy and I talk about, there has to be progressions and regressions and or different exercises that you'll use with this pattern for different phases of the model.
Absolutely. And we can put them in all phases of the model. That's one of the things I love the most.
That's the good thing about hinging. Yes.
So when we talk about the seven fundamental movement patterns, you guys know we've done podcasts on this. Ken Miller and I have talked about it on Random Fit. Marty and I have gone over it many, many times. But it's important to really think about those seven fundamental movement patterns and noticing too, when you're trying to explain it to a client, how hard it is for them to do and do it correctly. So if you just tell someone that you want them to deadlift, you're often going to see people bending at the waist, which is what you want them to do. Sort of, you want them to bend backwards. You want them to hinge back. So literally bring their glutes back as you lean forward with a flat back. You're going to see a lot of spinal flexion. And so when you're going through this and you're thinking about the gait, the twist, the pull, the push, the lunge, the hip hinge and the squat, the mechanics are going to be very, very important because as Marty just said, it translates into activities of daily living. So if you're starting to teach the right movement patterns, you slow it down, lighten the weight and do it correctly. And then you become more creative in your programming. You're going to have a tremendous outcome because as you've gone through the overhead squat, you'll see that the hamstrings are often very weak. They're in a lengthened position, especially if there's an anterior pelvic tilt, as well as you're also going to see the glutes being weak. And the glutes are weak pretty much with every compensation, it seems. So these are two primary muscles that we really want to get engaged. That is going to be something super helpful with every client that you have.
Yeah, great points. And our focus today is going to be on the hinge, but what we talk about today could be put into any of these movement patterns in the sense that if you follow the model and you establish proper human movement in that early phase, as you start to have load or if you start to have speed, the pattern is so ingrained that you won't have these tremendous compensations and you're building the muscular endurance, the ability of the tissue to handle load and speed in that first phase.
Well said.
Cool. So Wendy, you know, obviously we got to talk about where this came from, this exercise. And as I was doing my research, I always look at NESM's blogs first. So if you go to the website, we have a blog tab at the very bottom. So you'll see right there, blog.nesm.org/Romanian-deadlifts, right? So you can get this full article, but I took some of the information from there. And so the move was introduced to the masses in the 90s by a Romanian weightlifter. I'm going to do my best to pronounce the name, Nicu Vlad, who's an Olympic and world weightlifting champ. And if you go back to the 80s and 90s, even before that, Eastern Bloc of countries, Russia, USSR, some other countries as it got divided out from the USSR, they were always the leaders in this type of strength training. They did a lot of research and they knew exactly how progressive overloads, things like that. But this is where this exercise came from, Romanian deadlifts. So the coach, Dragomir, I'm going to give it a best shot here, Sorlansen. They invented the move to help the athlete strengthen his back for another exercise, the clean and jerk. So today, Romanian deadlifts are commonly used to strengthen the posterior chain. Wendy talked about how important that is, using those core muscles to stabilize and then the hamstring glutes to drive that movement. Those are your primary movers in the Romanian deadlift.
Very well said. I was so glad this was your slide, Marty, because I looked at it. I was going to just say Vlad and good old Dragomir. So.
I gave it a shot.
Hey, you know what? Well done. And today on the Master Instructor Roundtable with myself, Wendy Batts, and Marty Miller, we are talking about Romanian deadlifts. We're going to talk now as we move forward, why those are important. And we are going to talk a lot about the muscles that are targeted. And you can see that there are a lot of different variations as we go through, but it is a hip hinge pattern, which we talked about. Again, think about the fundamental movement patterns, focusing on the hamstring and glutes. And it's a form of deadlift that's noticeably with less bend in the knee. And for some reason, when you look at people doing a deadlift, oftentimes, if they're doing just a traditional deadlift, it's going to almost look like a squat because there's a significant bend in the knee. However, there are some completely straight leg deadlifts, but that's a different exercise. When we're talking about a Romanian deadlift, there's a slight bend in the knee. And so it's important that when you're going through the different types of deadlifts, that you know that there are variations. One's not necessarily better than the other, but it will target different muscles. And so when you're looking at the less bend in the knee, that's going to lead to more of a greater hamstring engagement. And so it is different than some of the other ones out there. And as you can see, the lady on the right here, she's doing a good hip hinge. She's looking up, which we're going to talk about as common errors next, but you can see that slight bend is what you're looking for. I wouldn't do any more than that. And if anything is, even if it's a little less, that still would be considered a Romanian deadlift.
Yeah. Just like anything else, available range of motion, right? So everyone's going to have their range. And then there's going to be some people who go too far, too excessive, and you're going to have to posterior tilt, flex your spine, et cetera. So key thing is available range of motion without compensation.
Always.
Shocker. So here's some, imagery. These are some ideas of how this exercise can be utilized through the entire OPT model. So going back, for those of you just listening here, we've got three images, and then we've got a picture of the five steps, five phases of the OPT model. So first, stabilization, endurance. This is definitely a muscular endurance type of a phase of training where you're looking at longer duration, you want more time under tension, less load, and you're building up that movement pattern to where it really becomes locked in. So here's one example. This gentleman is using in the top left a kettlebell as a single leg, and he has his leg kind of what I'll call like the windmill type or teeter-totter where his legs extended behind him. That's fine, especially early on. That might help somebody with their balance. You could also do a single leg Romanian deadlift with your leg back by the stance leg where it's just elevated off the ground. But that's a whole nother part of this conversation. Then under load in our strength endurance, our muscular development or max strength, you'll see that same image we had before where the female here in the top right is using dumbbells and she's going to less depth because probably the weight or how we capture the picture, but you'll see she got a nice straight spine, slight bend of the knees. Her feet look, from what I can see here, straight or almost straight. The chin should be tucked just slightly, but overall good form and technique. So this is where you're doing 8 to 12 reps and maybe even at your max strength, 1 to 5. Then the last one is a kettlebell swing. It's a traditional kettlebell swing. And there's parts of it, especially the first two parts, right? If you're looking left to right, where the kettlebell is passing through the legs. And as the kettlebell swings out before it becomes more of a standing dynamic plank stabilization, you are going through a dynamic Romanian deadlift. So you can use this exercise in stabilization through your strength block and your power block.
Yep. And I know, Marty, for myself, I usually in phase one will teach someone how to do a Romanian deadlift with a single leg, because again, I'm looking for an unstable surface. I want it to be very difficult for the client, but also something that's going to challenge them and an ability for them to do correctly. So their floating foot, as Marty mentioned, with it standing right next to the stance leg. If someone, and as you probably saw, or hopefully you'll see, or if not, you'll join the page of NASM Performance. I was working with the bodybuilder that she was a physique bodybuilder. And so she had a really big anterior pelvic tilt that I was trying to train her out of. And it was very, very difficult for her. Now, again, you look at her, she looks phenomenal, but some of those fundamental movement patterns was something that was never in her program, and something that where she might have looked part or looked the part, but there were certain muscles that were weak and not allowing her to maintain neutral position. So I just want to throw it out there that if you do have an individual, no matter what they look like in their assessments, they're showing an anterior tilt. When you teach this Romanian deadlift, or if you're doing it single leg, really focus on that neutral spine, because that's what you need for the hinge in order to take the pressure off of the actual spine itself. You're going to have a better outcome, but you're also going to know there's a lot of cueing and challenges that are going to come along with that. So start easy, lightweight, really focus on that. And then I would tell people if they want to, you know, extend the leg out, because at that point, you know, they do have good spinal control, that would be something even more progressed.
Yeah. And today to me was a phase two strength endurance, but during my warm up, because I knew I wanted to do my hinges, I did a two-legged hinge pattern with no load just to mentally prep that movement pattern. That was after my very specific targeted warm up. So, you know, you would see me in the gym doing no load, just driving my hips back into that position, making sure I kept my knees in the right position, make sure my shoulders were in the right position. Just as a patterning exercise, right? I've done them. I know how to do them. But before I picked up load, I still wanted to reintroduce that pattern before I went to my quote unquote first set.
All right. So form and technique. Marty and I have seen some of the best deadlifts and some of the worst deadlifts, probably out of all the people that we've either taught in classes or even with our own clientele. And again, it doesn't matter if they are a professional athlete or someone that has never stepped foot into the gym. So these are some common compensations that we're going to talk about next. However, let's set it up correctly first. So when we're thinking about doing a Romanian deadlift, you're going to think about the five kinetic chain checkpoints always. Marty and I always say this, start off correctly. And then if they deviate, you can see that their body is struggling and then we want to correct it. And it's either correcting because the weight's too much, or they just don't understand it, or their body isn't capable of performing it correctly at this point. So we know we need to do some more stabilization work to get our body prepared. However, you're going to stand with your feet about shoulder to hip width apart. If you're using a bar, I don't usually start with the bar, maybe some kind of like a mobility stick or something that's lighter if they want to hold on to a bar and they're used to that. But they're going to maintain neutral position of the head as well. Often people are going to look up, and if you look up, that's actually going to cause more of an arch in the back, and we don't want that. So you're going to keep your head in neutral position. You're going to hinge at the hips by just telling your client to just shift their hips backwards. So you've got to be very clear in your cueing when you're doing that. And then you also want to say just a slight bend in the knees. If you tell them to bend their knees, then you're going to probably have to then re-cue them that that's too much. So just say a slight bend. They usually get it. You demo, because show, tell, do, demo with them so they know what to do. But then if they do have a bar or dumbbells, or even as in Marty's case, he didn't have anything, you want to keep that bar as close to the shins as you can. So think about the form, go back into it, place the bar right around the shins. And then at that point, as you're coming up, you're going to think tempo as well. What phase of training are you in? If you're teaching it, you're probably in phase one. So you're going to go down for about 4 seconds. You're going to pause and then you're going to come right back up. Make sure that when they go down, they're only going to be able to go down as far as they can control. So if you notice a compensation, you stop them there. And then at that point, you tell them to make sure they're drawn in and focus on squeezing their glutes and focusing on that posterior chain. So the hamstrings and the glutes are the primary muscles that are engaged on the way up.
Yeah, great points, Wendy. And again, if we were in a longer workshop, we would be talking about some other things first, like a bridge, a plank. There's other things that are segmentally a part of any exercise. So when we talk about Romanian deadlift, so yeah, you should be able to do a great plank or plank variations and bridges and other things before you combine them into the Romanian deadlift. But that's the beauty of the OPT model. That's the beauty of what we do, is you're building towards that success without your client even knowing it. Mm-hmm. So I can take this one here. So some other common errors you can see in the image here. If you're watching us today, if you're listening in, you've all seen it, that rounded spine, that flexed spine. One, it could just be a lack of knowledge. Two, it could be a lack of proprioceptive feedback where we can't see each other, like, or you can't see yourself. So when I've trained with Wendy or any of the other master instructors around, there's a few exercises. Hey, watch my form on this because I think I'm in the right position. But some of these, you can't visually see yourself. And a lot of times it could just be really having no understanding what the right form is. And they're just trying to pick up too much weight. So they find a way to compensate through it. But I promise you, you do not want to round your back when you're picking up any type of load. It doesn't even have to be a heavy load, right? Think about where the vertebrae are. They're not in a neutral position. You're going to put a lot of stress. And every rep that you do like this, that becomes your new feedback loop and that becomes your norms. That's why we have to correct it. Hence why my first ones today were unloaded, just getting my body ready in that spinal position. And then looking up during the movement, man, I will date myself learning how to lift weights in the late 80s with the squat. It was head up. I can understand what they were trying to accomplish. But with that pelvo-ocular reflex, my pelvis is going to drop forward. I'm putting an arch into my cervical spine. So that's not neutral now. So it's just not good. You want your chin and eyes to follow the path you're going through. You're not ever looking up. That's just not safe for your neck or your low back. And then knees locked out or knees bending too much, right? Wendy said it at the very beginning, there's a slight bend and that is supposed to stay there throughout the hip hinging portion of the movement. That's how you get great hip extension driving backwards. And that really activates the glutes and gets you the exercise that you're looking for. So there can be a stiff legged variation. Not my favorite. It doesn't mean you couldn't do it. I might do it in a stabilization level, like the good mornings, things like that. But I'm not a huge fan of doing that with load because, again, I want to protect my low back. So, but there are opportunities to change the position, but in a Romanian deadlift, slight bend and they stay there.
Mm-hmm. And we're showing dumbbells and we're showing, you know, bars, but you can do these with cables. You can do these with so many different things and kettlebells. It's a hinge pattern. So just be creative and make sure too, that as long as the form is there, use different types of equipment and different types of, weight, if you will, to challenge the body, whether it's single leg, two legs, their foot's on an Erics pad, and they're trying to work on those patterns. So make it as challenging as they can control. We always keep going back to that, but also be creative. And this is the time where you can do it for sure.
And Wendy, I should have mentioned, I was speaking on the one where there's an image of someone standing facing away, a band would be between their legs, mm-hmm. anchored behind them. And I've seen people use the tricep rope and things like that. I like that one because it's that feedback system where the band is pulling you back in a sense. Mm-hmm. So it does help guide you to understand what that angle should be. So that's another opportunity to do it. So you can use bands. You could use a cable there as well with a tricep rope, something like that. The bar sometimes is a little too wide. Then you start to change your hip angles or turn your feet out. So just some kind of food for thought there when you're looking back through this is there is a reason to be facing away from the resistance, especially if you're trying to learn the patterning early on, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And these are some images. If you guys are listening, imagine, like Marty just put 4 different images here. When we talked about activities of daily living, it should have been a picture of Marty in the first one picking up boxes because of his move. But as you can see, this individual is actually rounding the back. He's really not in a very great position, because what he's going to end up doing is using his lower back, putting even more stress on L4, L5, which are often pretty messed up with people with low back pain. And so we want to avoid that. And more of a bend of the knees, almost more of a squat, is what I tell people when they're learning how to pick up a box, especially if it's heavier. However, you just want to avoid doing that one. But you can see it's something, how many times do you pick something off the ground? As you can see in the picture all the way to the right, there's a lady that's actually more in a squat position picking up her baby, or possibly putting the baby down for, you know, tummy time or whatever. But these are, you know, you got a male and a female, one's moving, one's lifting up a child or putting a child down. These are things that happen in life. And whether it's moving a box or moving a kid, how many times do you bend over throughout the day to pick something up or, you know, go grab something very quickly? In the center, of course, there's a golfer. How many times, especially in a round, does an individual have to tee up their golf ball? Or if you're me, you're having to do a drop because you lost your golf ball somewhere else because you're totally off course. There are often a lot of times, especially in sport, where hinging is going to be very critical in order to maintain the minutes and time that you need to be out there on the court or field or whatever, or in this case, the course. And then lastly, you can see a mom putting her child down into a crib. And again, so many times as a mother myself, you're just tired, you just bend over. And by the end of a day, if you don't do things correctly, your lower back is sore, you're just starting to get these really bad movement patterns. And then you're just going to want to lay perpendicular on a thoracic or on a foam roller so you can actually try to get mobility back into that thoracic spine. So these are things that translate into why hinging is important, making sure you've got really good form, because without even knowing it, you're doing it more times than you think.
And I wanted two things, Wendy. One, I'm going to go back to your golf, because if you're taking a drop and you're placing your ball on the ground, I'm going to have to look at the rule book, because you're supposed to be dropping the ball.
I'm bending over to get another ball out of my bag, and then I'm doing a drop, mind you.
I'm just saying, like, like, are you placing the ball down? No, I'm just joking.
But I do play tennis, and so right. I have to constantly pick up the balls.
Right,
when,
right. No, I'm joking with you. But yeah, the other thing that came to mind, I didn't think about a picture, is how many of our clients have talked about first thing in the morning when they go to brush their teeth or wash their face, that first hinge in the morning, right? So a lot of that could be hydration. It could be the way they slept, a lack of mobility, but it could be that they're not doing enough hinging to where their body is accustomed to that type of patterning, right? I'm not going to say that that's not going to happen for certain people, but I have a feeling there's a propensity there where they're not doing it frequently enough. So first thing in the morning, they go to hinge forward and they're like, oh, right?
They just stay there.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So just, you know, food for thought.
So Marty, we could talk about Romanian deadlifts. We can talk about all different types of exercises for hours, I'm sure, because that's what we do. And we talk about the purpose and the rationales and the reasons and where should it go in someone's program. And the beauty about a Romanian deadlift, you can put it anywhere. And it really does depend on the model. So if you're phase one, it often goes into the leg component. If you're doing a single leg Romanian deadlift, if you're really focusing, but again, in core, we would think about doing, as Marty mentioned, some planks and bridges, things to really activate the core, thinking about intervertebral stability first, maintaining that, strengthening ourselves. So when we're going down with weight, with gravity, that our spine is ready to use the right muscles, which should be the glutes and the hammies. Again, when you get into phase two, you could use the single leg Romanian deadlift, even in your balance exercises if you wanted. Or now, you, as you said too, Marty, you can start loading it with two legs or building the strength and really adding more load, because we already had that in phase one. And then the kettlebell swings and other types of exercises you mentioned, I think you can see how it translates, but it's very important to have a strong foundation, as always, first. And if you can teach the right patterns in the beginning with less load and the brain starts to get it, every time you're programming new software in your head, it's going to actually translate into better movement patterns and quality, which is going to build strength and then power. So make sure to use the model, follow the acute variables, think of the reason why you're having someone do that particular Romanian deadlift, and then program it correctly. And then always have progressions and regressions. Again, I said I start the single leg Romanian deadlift, the foot just floating next to it, to maintain neutral position. And then I'll go into more of an extended leg if they can control that with good form. And then we can go into some of the other exercises, but vary it up. Always have, okay, if you can't do it this way, what can you do to make that better? And then if it's too easy, how can you make it just a little bit harder each time?
Now, great takeaways, Wendy. And I think that this is an important topic because hinging is critically important. I don't want to underestimate that. But Wendy, before we give our contact information, if you can recap the amazing potential for the giveaway for those that are just joining us and potentially towards the end of our podcaster. So they'll go back and rewatch it, of course. But if you want to plug it one more time.
Yeah, just know that in the bottom of our podcast, we always have notes that you can just read about what we're going to talk about or what did we talk about. But inside those notes, there is also going to be a link that'll take you over to a survey. And the survey is asking questions about our podcast. What do you want to know? What can we do better? So there's some great questions in there. If you do take the time to fill out that survey, you have the opportunity to win a $100 Amazon gift card. And it's also allowing us to understand what can we do better. And then you have the opportunity to rate us. So hopefully we're earning our 5 stars. If not, we want to make sure that we do. So we want to know what we can do to make it even better.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Wendy. So if you can give everyone here your contact information in case they have questions or comments, and we'll obviously do our best to get back in a very quick manner.
Yes. So if you want to email me, you can find me at wendy.batts@nasm.org, or you can find me on Instagram at wendy.batts13.
And my information is coming right here. So dr.martymiller72 for Instagram. And then my email, marty.miller@nasm.org. So Wendy, thank you for all your amazing insight on this topic today. I'm sure our audience got a lot of key takeaways that they can implement right away. So for those of you that joined us, thank you so much. And we look forward to seeing you next week on the Master Instructor Roundtable.